You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 114 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And I'm coming to you from Park City, Utah, of all places.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks, a bi-coastal edition of the Pelton Cast.
No, these are not different coasts. No, definitely not different coasts. Was it exciting for you to get to say the home of the Super Bowl 48 champions? You never get to say that.
It's a little bit uncomfortable for me.
Okay, good. To start off with, I hope everyone who's listening to this has already listened to the terrific podcast we did with Jake One. Terrific exclusively because of him. About the 10th anniversary.
Called Talkin' Taco Time.
Yes, that. But also the one about the 10th anniversary of the Sonics moving that we published this Monday on the 10th anniversary of the move.
Yeah, that was fun to do. A little bit scary for you, but fun to do.
It was a little bit sad. It was a little bit funny. We laughed about Vitaly Potapenko and Vlade Radmanovic. We talked about Flip Murray maybe being good, thinking that back in the day. So it was a real gamut of emotions.
It was the most that Michael Schellebaugh has been talked about on a podcast in a very long time.
That is undoubtedly the case. All right, well, let's get right into it. We don't have much time this week because of the fact that I am out of the state. But so were you last week, traveling to both Los Angeles and more notably, Las Vegas, Nevada. Tell us about what you ate.
Wow. You want me to get right into it? Gee. First off, can we wish people, is this coming out today? Can we wish people a happy 4th of July?
Yes, we can wish people that. I can't guarantee that it's going to be out early on the 4th of July, but at some point on the 4th, it will probably be out.
Okay, well, in the Pelton Cast's continued effort to have as few people as possible listening, we said we need to record on the 4th of July.
This podcast was born on the 4th of July.
We're aware that it is one of the most listened to podcast days. So we want to get it out. This pales only in comparison to our Thanksgiving extravaganza. but I was in Los Angeles and Las Vegas. The only reason that we really mentioned Los Angeles, because I didn't do a ton of eating there, is a little bit of a burger comparison, which we're going to get to later.
A burger breakdown!
But first, on last Friday night in Las Vegas, I was there for a short vacation. I'll actually be back there next week for back-to-back live in Vegas. So we'll actually be both in Vegas at the same time next week and can compare food notes. But I had to talk about Momofuku right now.
All right. Get to it. We talked about Momofuku, I think, on the podcast after I went last year during Summer League. You had not been. You were envious of me. But then you went and got to try a slightly different menu than they had when I was there last summer.
For the first time ever, I went to Momofuku. I said, we're going for it. This is I don't want to say it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but it's a first-in-a-lifetime experience. And I wanted to get there, and I wanted to try all of the things. I literally wanted to order every single item off the menu.
That would have been very expensive.
Yes. The dinner, as it was very expensive. So you'd kind of given us a game plan going in of what we should be getting. You had mentioned, what was the pork dish that you mentioned?
The pork belly buns.
Okay, but not that one, the bosom.
The pork, yeah, the bosom, which is pork shoulder.
And that would have been kind of the primary shared dish for the meal.
The centerpiece, yes.
But we got there, and we saw that there were beef short ribs on the menu. It was like, it's a bit pricey. This is $258 for these beef short ribs. But we have to get them, right? I mean, this is the item that David Chang has been talking about. It's like one of the signature items of his family of restaurants, and we had to eat them, right?
Absolutely. How much did you tell our mom that that dish cost?
I did not tell her.
Okay.
But so normally when I tell her things about how expensive something is, I decrease the price by about 10%. This is one where I decrease the price by like 60 to 70%.
Yeah, that's a good call.
I'd be like, yeah, $49.
Mom, like, mom has probably never eaten a meal this expensive in her life.
It's a dollar per short rib. So we got the beef short ribs, the Wagyu beef, right?
Which is also my recommendation. Yes. Which they prepare for you tableside.
They did not prepare this for us tableside.
Oh, wow. I guess you didn't get the full experience. If they didn't blowtorch it for you tableside, it's not quite the same.
I could have gotten blowtorching?
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe they did away with the blowtorch.
Jeez. Okay, yeah, there was no blowtorch. pork belly buns and asparagus. I think that was the full meal.
Yeah.
So I need to talk with the start with the beef short ribs. I mean, all told, this was maybe the best meal that I've ever had. But those beef short ribs were insane. So it comes on basically like a platter of these three. Oh, that's one of my 10 to 15 children at the door. happy 4th of July. It comes on these. It's like the purge is happening outside. these giant ribs. We're talking like huge ribs, bigger than I've ever seen. And you get kind of three of those at the bottom. And then on top, they slice off a bunch of pieces, which more or less look like prime rib. And it is some of the like most flavorful meat that I've ever had in my entire life. Not some of, I take that back. It is easily the most flavorful meat that I have ever had. It almost doesn't even taste like prime rib. There's so much flavor bursting from these short ribs. Like you're just eating the fat like it's nothing. You would not cut anything off because it is the richest food that I think I've ever had, but so much flavor. It was very hearty. I had four slices of these beef short ribs.
Wow.
I mean, I could not recommend it enough, especially if you were in a group. We were a group of four. If you were a group of six, I think it would probably make a little bit more sense. And then you could really get in there and eat the beef short ribs too. Like, eat it like a rib also, you know.
What if you've got a group of three, but one of those people is Nate Duncan?
I still don't know. I'm sure that Nate Duncan can eat a pretty solid amount, but I just don't know. It's a lot of beef short rib. The photos don't really do it justice. We tried to get both this and the bosom, and the waiter was just like, no. He's like, you're not doing that.
Well, good on him or her.
And then, so the Wagyu tri-tip, right?
Okay, see, I think you might have gotten a slightly different Wagyu than I got last time. And I'm not sure if both options were on the menu when I went last year. But it definitely looked different from what I got.
I'm pulling up the Pumpkast Instagram to verify exactly what it was that I ordered. Yeah, so the Wagyu tri-tip, it's basically like little slices of beef, like barely cooked, but also exploding with flavor. I mean, it's amazing how small the meat was, the meat-to-flavor ratio, because it was so much flavor coming from this tiny piece of meat. We ended up getting 6 ounces of that, which was a lot. When you're talking in ounces, I'm like, 6 ounces? I could drink that in one sip. but it turns out that's actually a lot of beef.
Yeah, it turns out that beef is more filling than whatever it is you're drinking.
But like a little bit of a smoky flavor around the edge, which was very nice. It was a nice accompaniment to the beef short ribs, which were so rich, having that smokiness and kind of a different flavor in there. Also very rich, but incredible. And the pork belly buns. I'm sure that many people have had these before, but like just incomparable. Right?
Oh, yeah. A must.
Pork belly is great. The buns are great. Also, they're $7 a bun, so it's not that expensive. If you wanted to do Momofuku kind of on the cheap, these are a must-have. I saw there was a couple next to us that split a pork belly bun. And I was like, you gotta get one for each of you.
Yeah,
you're not going to want half of the pork belly bun.
That's a shame. That's a shame.
But again, so flavorful, and the bun was so soft. And I should mention that the beef short rib pancake comes with... the beef short rib comes with basically these like little pancakes that you would slice off the beef and then put them in there, squeeze some Somme sauce on, which I had for the first time ever. And come on, people, this existed in the world and I wasn't eating it.
It's not like you weren't aware of it. It's not like you hadn't been told about it.
I've never had it before.
We've talked about it on this very podcast.
I know, but it's different after you've had it.
Okay.
Especially when you've had it in the right place. I'm now currently doing research on getting the Somme sauce shipped to Seattle.
I think that is a doable thing. Is again, we have noted the former sneak of the week from Third Pelton brother, or I guess just friend of the pod, Tyler Gardner, was to take the Somme sauce and use it with Trader Joe's bow, I believe, right?
Tater Bros sneak of the week also.
Yes.
And then the grilled asparagus. I mean, it almost didn't even taste like asparagus. It was so flavorful. That's kind of my takeaway from eating at Momofuku, is that this food is so flavorful and so rich, it almost doesn't even taste like the food it's supposed to be. It's like it transforms it into some completely different entity, right? So there's asparagus there, but it's a vessel for everything that goes on to the asparagus. It's almost indescribable. Have you had this before?
No, I did not have the asparagus either the times I went last year.
Is it like this with all of the vegetables, though?
I can't remember if we had vegetables. I think we may have, but I can't remember for sure.
I mean, I kind of compare it maybe a little bit to Din Tai Fung, where it's like you get cucumbers,
right,
but you're not even tasting cucumber, right? All you're tasting is the sauce that the cucumbers are in.
I still would know it's there.
Don't think you would. I mean, all told, the meal was insane and just like so rich and so much, but excellent. Every single food, just like every bite that you have has so much flavor in it. There's nothing wasted, right? Every single part of it. And it's like maximalist food. I guess I would compare it most to like French cuisine, where it's like everything is really buttery and rich. It was a crazy experience.
So I would be very upset and jealous with you if it weren't for the fact that I am certainly going to go to Momofuku next week when, or even possibly this weekend. When
are
I'm
you doing
Vegas.
The beef short ribs, though? Like, you have to argue for the beef short ribs.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a difficult argument. I don't think that's going to be an argument at all.
Okay, good, good. But then so you have this, and then you follow it up by going to Milk Bar, which again is like some of the richest food that you can be getting. So the little truffle cake balls, right, which are basically just cookie dough, like kind of cold cookie dough, with maybe like some powdered sugar sprinkled on top. And it is just like all flavor coming at you. I mean, the thing is, I feel like David Chang has distilled down what do people like the most out of food. And it's like you don't like food feeling like work. You just want to taste every single bite, right? And you want it to be some of the strongest flavor that you've ever tasted. And that's kind of what this meal and the accompanying Milk Bar after was.
Let's also give credit to Christina Tosi, who is actually behind Milk Bar.
Okay, so that was Momofuku. Maybe number one meal I've ever had in my entire life.
Sounds about right.
It's definitely not the kind of meal that you can do often.
No.
It's like a once every 6 months meal, just because it is so much. It took me some hours to recover from this.
I did go twice in 5 days or 6 days last year.
You're doing it a little bit. Like, you could do it, you know, a little bit smaller. Like, if you're not having all of these items, but if you're having four slices of beef short rib, like, you're not going two times in 4 days and having that.
Instead, you're going to eat healthy by having Shake Shack.
Well, we actually that night, it was a heavy eating night. So we had this meal, had the Milk Bar, and then in the Cosmopolitan Hotel in Vegas, they also have a place called Secret Pizza.
Which is a poorly kept secret.
Well, yeah, because there's an insanely long line. It's like, hey, you ever heard of this place, Egg Slut? But I also had a slice of pizza later that night.
That's nonsensical to me, but okay.
I was competing my hardest at eating. We only had a couple days there.
All right, tell me about Egg Slut, a place to which I have never been but aspire to go this week.
That was the last meal that we had, and it was a very long line, as you can imagine. This was Sunday morning in Vegas.
Is there a sit-down component, or are you just ordering it and taking it to go?
There are chairs.
Okay.
But there's no official sit-down component.
It's not like you're sitting down and getting a menu, etc.
No. It's you're ordering in a counter. It's basically like fast casual. There are some chairs at the restaurant, and then there's a bunch of chairs that basically you can hang out at right across in the Cosmopolitan. So there's plenty of places to eat.
All right, so what time were you going there, this line, and how long was the wait?
Like 10 a.m. I would say the wait was probably 45 minutes.
10 a.m. So on a Sunday morning?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably the prime time for them.
Yes.
I wasn't surprised that there was a line. It's it was the exact opposite of In-N-Out, though, because you know that In-N-Out gets people through the line very quickly, but then you wait after when they cook your food.
Mm-hmm.
This is the exact opposite of that, where you're waiting in line, but once you get to the front, the food comes pretty quickly.
Okay. I mean, I'll probably try to go on a weekday morning where it won't be as crazy in terms of the line.
I think there's probably still going to be a line.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying no line.
So I wanted to really explore the menu here. I want to try a bunch of different options. Again, you know, I have a lot of time here. So I had basically like the bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich, which comes on a brioche bun. It was excellent. It's kind of like the highest form of breakfast sandwich, which breakfast sandwich to me is like one of the best foods there is.
Yeah.
I also had a biscuit with honey butter.
Okay.
Which was great. I mean, biscuits are always great. And then I also had basically what they call the slut cup, which is like a bunch of potatoes at the bottom. It comes in a little glass cup, and it's like a potato-y mixture.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put an egg on top, like a sunny side up egg, and you mix it all around. And then you're supposed to put it on basically like some nice French bread, like toasted French bread.
Huh. Interesting.
It was. I feel like that's maybe one of their signature items. I felt like I had to try it. I don't think I would get it again, though.
Okay.
But Because if I'm having potatoes for breakfast, which great, I love potatoes for breakfast, but I want them as like country fried potatoes. You know what I mean?
Sure. All right. Any other takeaways from Egg Slut?
It was great. You should definitely go there.
Yeah, definitely plan to.
There's not a lot of brunch options. This isn't Portland, right? There's not a ton of brunch options around. There's like places where you can get some granola. But I think that they need one more brunch place. I mean, this is in the Cosmopolitan Casino, but even across the board in Vegas, it's not like you look around and there's a ton of great brunches.
Okay.
Vegas is about to start looking a little bit more like Portland, though.
How so?
Do you want? Are you aware of this at all?
Well, you told me that you had news to break.
News to break.
You've done some investigative research.
So they're adding in basically like a food court on that second floor of Cosmo. Right near where Momofuku is, they're adding in a food court called Block 16.
Uh-huh.
And this is not your parents' food court.
Oh, I would hope not.
Going in there, I think it's 16 different restaurants, including both Pock Pock and Lardo.
Wow, interesting.
Can you believe this?
That's quite fascinating.
I mean, I'm just like I'm so impressed with the people who are running this casino for catering to hipster foodies, right?
It's something we didn't know that we needed until it existed.
Any casino could have done this. Like, it could have been a lower level casino that could have been like, yeah, let's just embrace this. I'm sure that Lardo would be stoked to get into Vegas, you know, however that looked. But it's like, oh, it also happens to be at one of the nicest casinos there is.
Well, I think that's probably less than a coincidence. But that's really important because I was thinking earlier about my eating in Vegas and how there's not really great sandwich options, in my opinion, in that part of the Strip.
Well, just you wait. Lardo's coming.
Well, I don't think it'll be there in time for me this weekend. But
it says summer 2018. You never know.
I guess they can't be entirely ruled out. By the way, speaking of summer 2018, the Papa Woody's, Little Woody's in the airport, still not open.
Lots coming. I'm still waiting on that Shake Shack in Seattle. But we should do some research on what the other 14 restaurants are, because if that's the caliber they're getting from Portland, there's probably 14 other restaurants that we might not even be familiar with that are at that same caliber.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh,
so you'll
so
have to
excited.
Eat all 16 of them in one sitting.
If you're competing your hardest, you would.
All right.
But speaking of Shake Shack.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up with the eternal struggle, the eternal debate. In-N-Out versus Shake Shack, because you had both of them last week.
I think Shake Shack wins this round.
Wow! Wow, a 10-9 win for Shake Shack?
So I went to, you know, I'm always making sure, I'm like hanging out, taking these business meetings in LA, and it was like we had like a 2-hour period, and actually we're in like right near Hollywood Boulevard, and I'm like, the In-N-Out is just right there. It's like a 5-minute walk. It's like, okay, we're getting there. Have enough time to make sure that we can order the food and have time to eat it. I got a double-double animal style fries. The animal fries were significantly better this time than they were the last time that I had In-N-Out back in September.
I like that you have like In-N-Out vintages.
That wasn't September. No, that was like February. So at the beginning of this year.
Uh-huh.
The double-double animal style was good, but it just didn't elevate to that next level. I think I might have had In-N-Out enough where it's like, I know In-N-Out really well now.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It's no longer a treat.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I still love eating it. It is a treat, but it's not like mind-blowing. You know, like when I go to Momofuku the next time and the next time and the next time, like, you know, I've had this. I know what to expect from these flavors.
It's diminishing returns.
It's not going to alter my life in the same way. Shake Shack I've been to much less, though. And the Shake Shack burger, I just had the double Shack burger, right? Like kind of a traditional item there, but it was just so well done. It was like the cheese between the two patties. I don't know how they managed to make it taste so cheesy, right? It was like every bite you're kind of getting this like cheese and beef flavor coming at you. It is so well done.
Well, I'm excited to try it again. Like we talked about this in December when I went back to the New York area and had Shake Shack there for the first time and thought that it was much better than I had thought when I had it in Vegas previously.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll be able to figure it out when we're both in Vegas together.
Yeah, we'll see.
But also their cheese fries, like the way they're basically using like this like super cream soft cheese on their cheese fries, and In-N-Out, the cheese that In-N-Out uses can end up getting kind of hard and crunchy.
Yes.
But there's really no comparison to the Shake Shack cheese fries.
I'm not a huge fan of their fries themselves, but you know what? I've adopted the Ben B lifestyle, even though, well, not, I haven't fully adopted the Ben B lifestyle because I'm not doing two burgers each time, but I rarely order fries at either of those locations anymore. It's just burger and shake.
I did the barbecue cheese fries, barbecue bacon cheese fries this time.
Well, that's intriguing.
Incredible. I mean, it was just a great experience. The worst thing about it, it was that the Sounders were playing at the time. And they were showing that on a very large screen that we were forced to watch.
Are we going to skip ahead to them?
Yeah, we can.
Okay. By the
or
way,
do we have anything else on Vegas food?
I don't think so right now. We'll be covering this again probably next week after I've gone there and well, possibly I am there. No burrito taco review in our search for Seattle's best burrito taco, although I went to two locations over the weekend that you're going to have to get to now to compare and do our analysis.
What location?
Went to Fonda La Katrina in Georgetown. Okay. And then also, while I was searching for something post-game after the Storm game on Sunday night, went to Cactus in South Lake Union.
Okay.
So those are the two spots for you to hit.
Are we going to Rocket Taco?
Possibly, although the reviews have not been great.
Wait, really?
Yeah, they have not.
Okay.
All right, let's start with the depressing Seattle sports news. That being, as you alluded, the Sounders, who could not hold three ties at 0-0, 1-1, and again 2-2 in a 3-2 eventual loss on Saturday to the arch-rival Portland Timbers, the Timbers' first win ever at CenturyLink Field. Backup goalkeeper Brian Meredith got the start in place of Stephen Fry, who was out with a concussion he suffered at the end of the previous week's game against Chicago. This was Meredith's first appearance of the season in MLS play after replacing Tyler Miller as the backup goalkeeper this offseason, and his first MLS appearance since 2012 when he played for the Sounders. But I wouldn't really say that Meredith was default for the three goals here. This was just the Sounders' back line being just dreadfully awful. It's... Everything is bad about the Sounders right now, except for the fact that I guess that they officially introduced, as we've talked about on the podcast the last couple weeks, Raul Ruiz Diaz is their latest designated player, announced that signing on Friday, unveiled him to the crowd on Saturday before the match. He won't be eligible to play until after the MLS summer transfer window opens on July 10th, so his first possible match is July 15th at Atlanta United.
And he had better be good fast.
Here's the thing. Can I give you a take?
Yes.
It's only the 4th of July. There are still approximately 8 months left in the MLS season. The season is over for the Sounders.
Wow!
I know that...
You're calling it?
I'm calling it. I know that technically they still have 17% playoff odds according to the 538 Soccer Power Index projections. That's shockingly good given how bad they have been. That's a higher percent than they have points so far this season in the matches they've played.
But they're averaging something like 0.8 points per match.
It's a very low number. But look, the season is over. And here's the thing. We saw this with Clint Dempsey when he joined the Sounders mid-season in a year which I can no longer remember off the top of my head, but is presumably either 2014 or 2015.
I think it was 2014.
He, you know, it was an adjustment.
Actually, it was 2013 that he joined the team.
Wow, is that long ago? It was an adjustment when he first got here. You know, he didn't come in and dominate right away. And that was despite the fact that Dempsey had played in the MLS and was coming back to America and not adjusting to a new country and a new league like Ruiz Diaz will be. So I don't have high expectations for him the rest of the season. But here's what I think is the fact that the Sounders are out of it makes this an excellent opportunity to just integrate him, figure out what the Sounders are doing, and look ahead to 2019.
Wow.
And then we'll see who's actually managing the team or serving as general manager at that point. Because
I was going to say, I think that the team may look a lot different by the time that they're ready to get going with him.
It is very true.
You don't think that there's any chance that Ruiz Diaz comes on, plays well enough to, and the team looks good enough, maybe they don't make the playoffs, but they can salvage their jobs, Garth Lagerwey and Brian Schmetzer?
Perhaps. And, you know, I think particularly for Lagerwey, this is important that, you know, this is the marquee signing here. I think the other thing that will help is getting Roman Torres back after Panama was knocked out of the World Cup. It definitely seemed to be a pretty substantial drop-off from Torres to Kim Keehee on the back line, I would say. And we've also seen that the left-back position has been a problem for the Sounders. Nuhu, Waylon Francis, neither of those guys have been able to replace the production they got from Jovan Jones last season. You know, we kind of thought that since Jones didn't play a lot in the second half, that maybe it wouldn't be that big of a deal. It was a big freaking deal, as it turned out.
We were wrong. I can't believe that you're calling it, though. Right now, you're calling the season.
Look, the pessimist is either right or pleasantly surprised. So I'm going to take one of those two options the rest of the season and, you know, just not have any expectations going into the last 8 months of this interminable MLS season. In happier news, Gustav Svensson in Sweden reaching the quarterfinals of the World Cup, where they will face England. So that'll be exciting.
Go Sweden.
Yeah, the only successful sounder right now, Gustav Svensson. All right, a quick update on the Seattle Arena situation. There was an updated schematic design for the Key Arena renovation presented to the Seattle Design Commission by the Oakview Group. It expands the public space on the south side of the arena to address some concerns raised in the draft environmental impact study that came out recently. And then perhaps I thought most interesting, they propose in there potentially building office and residential space directly south of the arena and next to where the current First Avenue garage is by Key Arena.
I'm trying to think of where that is.
So if you're driving along First Avenue South, you know, you look right the block before you come to Key Arena, there's basically, so there's the garage is on, you know, is
like right by the Science Center?
Not quite to the Science Center. You're on First Avenue South. So there's a garage, but there's also like an large open space where now like they have the gate that you drive through to get into the garage, and that they plan to utilize as actual productive space.
Huh.
So I don't know if they'll be able to. That would require, I believe, some rezoning to be able to build a multi-story building there. But something they're looking into, and a reminder that, you know, at this point, oftentimes arenas, we see this certainly with Chris Hansen playing, they're as much about the surrounding real estate as they are the actual arena itself.
Baby is fantasy genius. I don't know if you can pick that up. It's really hating this news.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Rough 4th of July for Baby Fantasy Genius. Well, maybe he'll enjoy more. We didn't talk about this last week. We should have gotten to this. Dwayne Wade telling Bloomberg Sports, or just Bloomberg, I guess, that he wants to be an NBA owner someday, and then asked where, said, "I want Seattle's team, the Sonics, to come back. I think Seattle is a great basketball town. I would love to be a part of that."
Wow. Of all people, Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, it's pretty random. There's no evident connection to the city of Seattle, but awesome that he's thinking about this. And I think he is very serious about the potential of joining an ownership group someday.
I mean, he probably only played in Seattle a few times, right?
Let's see. Wade's rookie season was 04, so he would have visited Seattle 5 times, I believe.
It's crazy. Of all players, I mean, great. I'm into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The more people talking about basketball to Seattle, the better.
Exactly. No complaints there.
He wasn't saying that he wanted to own a team in Mexico City or Louisville, Kentucky or something.
He certainly was not saying that. Okay, with that, I think it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners Hot Takes coming at you.
All right, it's time for a patriotic edition of Mariners Hot Takes on the 4th of July. Oh, say, can you see the M's a half game out of first place, improbably staying in the AL West race, whose broad ability to defy the fears of stat geeks has produced in a game-winning streak and a Nelson Cruz Rockets red glare. Denard's band plucking hits out of the air gave proof that turning the clock wasn't necessary for a playoff spot to be theirs. Oh, say, does that Mariners banner yet wave? Or the second wild card and an Edwin Diaz save?
I like that. This morning I told you, you were like, "Are you ready?" And I was like, "I need to write the national anthem, but about how good the Mariners are." And then I was able to kick that to you because I was dealing with all these children. So you were the one who had to sing on the podcast.
What did you think about that, though?
It was really very good.
That was pretty quick
work. Put it together in like 5 minutes also.
I'm most proud of the Stat Geeks winning streak.
I know. I'm not surprised that was the angle that you took.
I mean, it's insane what the Mariners are doing. Like, it makes no sense.
Look, I don't mean to take full credit for this.
Well, obviously you should.
Credit for this. After last week, I said I was pivoting to positivity and that the Mariners would not lose again. And the Mariners have not lost since that point.
You said 100% playoff odds, and it's actually getting surprisingly close to that. Their playoff odds, according to FanGraphs, assuming again that you count the second wild card as a playoff spot.
Count the second wild card as a playoff spot.
All right, we had that debate last week. We don't need to have it again. Up to 88%.
Wow.
Per FanGraphs, they are 8 games ahead of the Oakland A's, who are now in that second wild card spot. passing the Angels, who did get Shohei Ohtani back in a designated hitter role, activated him off the DL yesterday as part of this series against the Mariners. That includes a game on the 4th of July that probably will already have been played by the time that you listen to this podcast.
But Shohei Ohtani has nothing on Wade LeBlanc.
Who's going to be back? 1 year extension for Wade LeBlanc. One more year. One more year.
Shohei Ohtani was Wade LeBlanked yesterday.
You
realize all offseason we were talking about how the Mariners needed Shohei Ohtani. Now he's a DH on a, what, fourth place in the AOS team?
I think that would only... Yeah, I guess that's true. Wow. Wow, fourth place in the AOS.
You already did your story of Shohei or whatever, right?
I did.
But just great decision. Great decision there. It really goes to show, there was a Bill Simmons podcast where he was talking about LeBron to the Lakers. Was like Albert Pujols going to the Angels. The real fear is not that it's like Albert Pujols going to the Angels. The real fear is that it's like Shohei Ohtani going to the Angels.
Oof. Yeah, that'd be rough.
So much hype. Still in fourth place. Can't beat out the A's of all teams. The Mariners and their run differential are now in second place in the AL West and a half a game out of first place. We don't need to be talking about the second wild card spot right now. What we should be talking about is that the Mariners are going to win the AL West.
Their odds are that 5% per Fangraphs.
It's kind of insane.
So you're saying
hello the odds?
No, it's not insane because their run differential is 147 runs worse than the Astros.
If you care about that sort of thing,
I do.
You know, there's one thing that I care about, and that's wins and losses.
You know who has a good point differential?
Who is that?
The Seattle Storm, who still have the WNBA's best.
I'm not talking about the Mariners yet. Hold on.
No, we don't have time.
This is the 4th of July, and the Mariners are sitting in a playoff spot. This is a monumental thing to have happen. 4th of July baseball matters in Seattle.
It's true.
All right, now you can talk about the Storm.
Okay. Storm now tied for the WNBA's best record at 13-5 after winning 3 out of 4 games over the past week. It looked like they were going to start to come back to earth a little bit when they lost at Minnesota, but it turns out the Lynx just on fire. I believe they stretched their winning streak to 7 games before improbably losing to the worst team in the league, the Indiana Fever. But the Storm returned home to beat the LA Sparks without their one of their stars, Nick Ogwumike, in a really fun game that was on ESPN2 and drew the highest ESPN2 rating for a WNBA game, and I believe 7 years, then got an impressive win over the Connecticut Sun on Sunday and ran the winning streak to 3 games with an easy win starting a road trip against the New York Liberty on Tuesday. As mentioned, the Storm number one in the WNBA in point differential at plus 7.6 points per game ahead of the Sun at 5.0 points per game. Next week, see Storm travel to Atlanta to conclude this brief road trip and then return home to host a couple of contenders, the Washington Mystics, and then the Sparks will visit again for Kids Day. Also moving up in the standings, the Seattle Reign, who in another matchup of the Northwest teams and arch rivals, they got the win at home, beating the Portland Timbers 1-0 last Saturday night, getting the only goal in that match from Jody Taylor in the 89th minute. The win, combined with a loss by the Orlando Pride, moved the Reign back into second place in the NWSL table. They are 1 point ahead of the Pride and the Chicago Red Stars, with one match in hand on both teams, heading into a game at a home game against Houston this Saturday night.
Seattle is now a baseball, women's basketball, and a women's soccer town.
It's just a women's sports town, generally.
What do you think was the impetus for this game, the Storm against the Sparks game, having such a high rating?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it's generally part of it. It's probably the fact that I tweeted about it.
We're taking credit for a lot of things.
I think the Shea Serrano wave, it's a good moment right now for the WNBA.
It really is. It feels like the WNBA is kind of happening. I had this thought that people love the NBA so much right now, right?
Yeah.
The NBA is the sport of youth throughout the country and throughout the world. That why would we not be embracing more basketball?
Exactly.
When there's more basketball sitting there waiting for us.
Well, we need to get you and your 18 children out to a game.
We're trying.
Are you?
The King County Library System is helping us out there.
Yeah. They helped a lot of people out, as a matter of fact, which was great attendance. The game against Connecticut last Sunday was just about sold out.
Really? I mean, maybe it's between following Shea Serrano and Natalie Weiner on Twitter, but I feel like I'm seeing a lot more women's basketball content than I've ever seen.
I feel like I'm stepping up the women's basketball content as well.
Are you?
Don't tell me short hair.
On your own personal Twitter or the Kate Pelton women's basketball?
A little of both.
Yeah.
A little of both.
Wow.
All right, well, let's wrap up here on a somber note. Right before the Storm game tipped off, as I was sitting there at Key Arena in my seat on press row, saw come across the timeline a tweet from Cam Chancellor that was basically announcing his retirement, although he never used the word retirement, which is key for a reason we'll get to for in a second. Most notably said that my final test showed no healing and, you know, basically announced that he would be unable to play football going forward.
I mean, not unexpected news, but still sad news.
Exactly. I mean, we knew this outcome was likely all along, you know, dating back, I think, to when Cam was injured last season. But it's still, now that it's, you know, essentially official, I think we definitely need to take a minute to look back on Cam Chancellor's career because, you know, as much as just about anyone from this era of Seahawks football, I think he deserves a lot of credit for the Super Bowl run in 2013, for his performance in that Super Bowl, the intimidation factor he provided with his hit on Demaryius Thomas early in that game, and, you know, especially with Denver's strategy not to test the Seahawks deep and to play underneath. Cam Chancellor was a big reason why that didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, a player who is known for big hits but relatively clean throughout his career.
Yeah.
Kind of unprecedented for a strong safety, especially who has kind of the reputation that Cam Chancellor had, somebody who was just there over and over and over again, somehow managed to be a little bit underrated in the secondary, probably because they also had Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman, but doesn't kind of get that same sort of recognition necessarily. But I think throughout this run, maybe was probably the most impactful player in that secondary at a lot of different points.
At some
point. You think about some of those hits that he had and moments that he had. You know, it's interesting that we're talking about this on the 4th of July because he had so many more fireworks than anybody else in that secondary, right? I mean, the hit that he delivered on Vernon Davis, I think week 16 of the 2013 season, with the 49ers coming to town, feeling really confident in themselves. And Cam Chancellor with that hit, Vernon Davis drops the pass. I mean, unbelievable. One of the defining hits of this entire Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, John Schneider run.
I believe Zach Whitman called that like the real start of it in terms of their dominance.
I mean, unbelievable. But then also you have the interception that he took back against Cam Chancellor in the playoffs, or against Cam Newton, the Cam on Cam violence in that playoffs that he took back to seal that game, jumping over the line in the playoff game. I think was that the same game?
I believe that was, yes.
Where Cam Chancellor jumped over the line, the first time that we'd really ever seen this. And you see it and you're like, wow, that is one of the greatest feats of human physicality, what Cam Chancellor just did over and over and over again. And managed to get the rule changed because of it. I saw the hit against Mike Tolbert where he was kind of coming through clear. Cam Chancellor comes out of nowhere and stops him dead in his tracks. I mean, what Cam Chancellor achieved, just being a presence back there and being consistent, coming as a fifth-round draft pick pretty much out of nowhere, really defining what that the Legion of Boom meant.
And, you know, you had touched on this briefly, but what I liked most about Cam is, yeah, there's this tradition of strong safeties who are big hitters but are also wildly undisciplined and commit a lot of penalties, are out of position a lot of the time because of the risk that they take in pursuit of those hits. Ken Hamlin is in many ways kind of the archetype of this position in my mind, at least for the Seahawks. And what I loved about Cam is that he wasn't that at all. He wasn't like going out of his way looking for hits and hurting the team in the process or hurting other people in the process. He was just delivering those hits because he was simply so strong and so sound in his technique that just by playing the game the right way, he was still able to provide that power and intimidation. And, you know, especially as we see football evolve and an understanding of the tools that it takes on the human body, including in this case on Cam's body, although, you know, fortunately it's not necessarily a head injury that has caused the end of his career. You know, to be able to do that while still playing in a clean and safe way, I think, is one of the things I will always remember and appreciate about Cam Chancellor.
Yeah, I have almost no recognition or recollection of any notable penalties that Cam Chancellor had, right?
I mean, there's a couple here and there, but, you know, it's funny because all the reputation of the Seahawks is like this dirty team. Like, yeah, okay, maybe they hold a lot on the perimeter in terms of their quarterbacks, but they're not out there trying to injure people and, you know, committing personal fouls. They have been incredibly disciplined with that, you know, with the rugby style tackling that Pete Carroll has embraced.
Just the embodiment of a Pete Carroll player at his peak. Somebody who's coming as an underdog, who learned how to play the position the right way, is where he needs to be pretty much all the time, and a little bit kind of underspoken, I would say, like not somebody who's going to take too much attention away. Never really was known as a malcontent. I mean, he missed those couple of games with his holdout. But honestly, we can see why somebody would hold out for more money or more guaranteed money, because nothing is guaranteed in the NFL, right? We see Cam Chancellor, this one play that randomly happens at the end of a Thursday night game. It's not even really shown on TV or much is known about it. And boom, his career is over.
Yeah, it's very sad. As you mentioned, you know, fortunately, the contract the contract extension that he was able to sign before last season fully guarantees his 2018 salary. And then $5.2 million of his 2019 salary is guaranteed for injury. So, you know, if he retired, he would walk away from that salary. And that's why it's notable that he did not actually announce his retirement. You know, presumably, I guess there's some chance that the two sides could come to a buyout agreement here, but you know, otherwise, presumably he ends up on IR and of course does not take up a roster spot, but still is able to get that salary and, you know what, get everything you got coming to you.
Presence around, you know,
yeah,
as basically like an extra secondary coach, being there in training camp and being there on the sideline. But this is also why. One of the reasons we need to think about and support players who are holding out, and never judge those players for trying to get more money or more guaranteed money, because they should be trying to get as much as they can, because we have no idea what's going to happen to them in the process.
Absolutely. I mean, they're putting, you know, they're, if not necessarily directly their lives, at least their quality of life and their health on the line every game. And to be upset that they're trying to get more money is, you know, I think pretty hard to justify at this point, given what we know about football in the year 2018.
So it's sad to see Cam go, but he was another great Seahawk. Do we feel like he's a Hall of Famer?
No, I don't think he probably played long enough or at quite high enough of a level to get there. But, you know, he's certainly a Seahawks Hall of Famer. Ring of right. Honor. All right. Yeah, that's a down note to go on out on. But if in fact you somehow managed to listen to this on the 4th of July, I hope you have indeed a happy holiday. And if not, hope you did have one.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.